Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Always locked on heat. Biscayne, South Beach. Goldberg and Ramil. Talking heat, body chill. Got the stats in the news. Got the facts and the views. Never know what they gon' say. Mailbag on a Monday. Pat Riles got the pack ride. Coach Spo got the know-how. Three bands in the raps now. Heat Nation, that's a packed house. Heat talk at the game time. Heat talk every day. I'm always locked on heat. Got it locked on heat. Always locked on heat. Keep it locked on heat. See geek for the cheek. What's the day got the heat?
Now, locked on heat hopes. Wes Goldberg and David Ramil.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. It's Monday, so we're doing the mailbag. But first, we've got to talk about this Joel Embiid Hassan Whiteside nonsense. Because in the last preseason game, which was not televised, but several highlights came out and of Joel Embiid drawing a foul on Hassan Whiteside and then telling Whiteside that, or telling the Heat to get Whiteside off the court, and then afterwards that ensued in a social media back and forth, can we call it, David, of Whiteside going
fair.
At Embiid going back at Whiteside. And it was, first of all, look, Embiid, I know, is a polarizing figure, and so is Whiteside. So that makes this very interesting. And it makes it very easy to pick sides. I'm not picking sides. I'm all on board with this. I think this is the entertainment value of this is high, and I'm on board, and I can't wait for the next time the Heat play the 76ers.
I'm torn, to be 100% honest with you. Like, I'm just not sure what to do about it at this point because... You know, obviously we've been critical of Whiteside. He's by no means a perfect player. Although it seems, according to our Twitter feed, that we're getting quite the reputation of being negative about Whiteside. And I don't think that's been the case either.
It's tough love, people. It's tough love.
I mean, you can be critical. You don't have to be blindly allegiant to somebody. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. As far as the Embiid-Whiteside talk, I mean, the situation was a very odd one. I think Hassan was probably taking it easy. I don't think he was really as geared up for that matchup. And there's no denying that that matchup's a difficult one. He claims, and again, we don't have any footage of it, but he claims that the first two fouls that Embiid drew on Whiteside were flops, which seems possible. He does seem like he's active in as far as reaching around and kind of swinging his arms in such a way that draws a lot of contact. Whiteside isn't an ideal one-on-one defender. He's more of a weak side help defender to block shots. That's just the way that the nature of Miami's defense is. So having his hands full with a guy like Embiid, who's very, very versatile offensively, could certainly be a challenge. That third one looked like a pretty, you know, accurate foul call, I'd say. That's sure. The one that prompted Embiid to point at Spoelstra and say, get him out of there. But as others have pointed out, if it wasn't a preseason game where the lineups really don't matter and Spoelstra doesn't care about his rotations and foul troubles and everything else like that, he would never have kept Whiteside in there after drawing a second foul.
Yeah.
To pick up one in the first 5 minutes, that's terrible. To pick up a second one, that's absolutely horrible. You get him out of there. He gets the hook early on, and whatever happens, happens. Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk, whoever gets a chance at trying to guard Embiid goes in there. So that's that. I think he's making a lot of noise about something that probably wouldn't have mattered. And again, it's all good fun for a lot of people. My problem is with Embiid, like the church of Joel Embiid has just gone a little bit too loud for my taste. You know, I had a problem with him last year when he was drawing it up. There's an entertainment value at the same time. But I kind of see the same point as design. It's like, you know what? Talk to me when you're actually able to play more than 31 games in the last 3 years. You know, talk to me when you're actually there in the regular season. What did he call him? Embiid eclipse. I mean, that's pretty scathing. You know, that was pretty sharp on Whiteside's part. And I don't know. It's like I'm all aboard wanting to see Embiid be this generational player. But I guess I kind of want him to tone it down just a little bit until the actual proof is there that he can do this for a sustained period of time. And maybe I'm joyless. Maybe I'm not as beleaguered as the process truthers in Philadelphia that had to get beat up emotionally for years because of the tanking and everything else. And so they're thin-skinned as hell. As thin-skinned as Miami and Heat Twitter has become during the Big Three era, where they were so defensive if anybody criticized LeBron or D-Wade or anybody related to Miami – I think the Philadelphia 76ers fans are doubly thin-skinned. Like, they're just even more sensitive about anything because they've had to endure scathing taunts from national pundits about the ills of tanking and why this is a decrepit franchise and why they've thrown the integrity of the league all the way. And so when a guy like Embiid comes around who seems like he's a legitimately really, really good player, I understand why they rush to his defense. But it's just become a little bit too much. They need to back off. Embiid needs to back off a little bit. Again, that's my two cents. But I kind of want him to tone it down just a little bit. And at the same time, realize that this is a situation. Look, you know, the other thing, too, is the fact that Rudy Gobert likes Joel Embiid's comments. And Andre Iguodala says,
Iguodala, yeah.
Embiid the God.
See, that's the other thing about this is that the players love Joel Embiid, right? They love how he's just –
Hassan Whiteside?
We know that players don't particularly care for us on Whiteside, right? That's And so I think they like that Embiid is just so just carefree about his social media where a lot of people are guarded and Embiid is very much just very transparent. He's good at social media, right? This is good social media. Now, I don't know if that the 76ers PR team thinks that.
I'm sure they love it. Anything to deflect the flack that they've caught over the last five seasons. Man. At this point, you know, the fact that Embiid's out there making a name for himself, that even when he wasn't playing, he was still out there drawing a lot of attention. I think they'd have to love it.
When Embiid tweets something at Whiteside saying, and keep caring about your stats and not your team's success, your plus minus was ass. Right? It's just, that is just good quality trash talk. Right, but it's funny. First of all, it's untrue at this point because that's an old story from Whiteside. Right, it's like 3 years ago the plus minus was bad, and then, but still,
that was Kawhi Leonard's, right?
Right, it was Embiid's. It's still something that Embiid is paying attention and he knows the right buttons to push, and that's just hilarious, right? And it's kind of funny that we're in this at this era now where a lot of the trash talking it was happening on the court, obviously, but then it carries over into social media afterwards. Right, where, you know, in the past in the NBA, it might carry over into a locker room or outside in the hallways underneath the arena, right? Well, now it's just carrying over to social media afterwards, and now we all get to watch it unfold.
Wasn't it prompted by, like, Bleacher Report video of that third foul that Embiid points at Spoelstra?
Yeah, and somebody tweeted, and funny, saying,
side, yeah.
funny some just random person, mTorres92895.
Got caught up in it.
At Joel Embiid, you funny saying someone can't guard you when you're 1-for-7. Respect at Young Whiteside. Whiteside responds, the media won't show that. Laughing face emoji, shrug emoji. And then it goes from there. And then Embiid responds, Whiteside responds, blah, blah, blah. Look, we've got Whiteside's back on this, of course. But at the same time, I'm with you, David. I get it. That the church of Embiid is loud. It is annoying, and Whiteside's right. Play more than 31 games and we'll talk, right? Do it for more than 31 games. Both of these guys are good. And what this effect is, you know, I think what we could take away from this, more so than just really looking forward to the next Heat 76ers game. And by the way, Spoelstra came out and said, I have no problem with this. I like a good an old school rivalry. Let's go, let's do this. Just make sure that you perform on the floor. And if this gets Whiteside and Embiid to basically eye each other for the full 82-game season, I'm 100% in, right? If Whiteside is eyeing Embiid's stats and Embiid is eyeing Whiteside's stats and they are just vying to be maybe the one center, the one true center on the All-Star roster because we know oftentimes you don't get more than that,
right?
I am on board for this. The season is – the Warriors are going to win 70-plus games. They're going to win the championship, right? Like, that's just – it seems like it's a conclusion. We can argue about whether or not that's valid, but that's basically – what everybody's anticipating. So with that, I'm down for any interesting storyline, and this is going to be great.
Magic Bird of the social media era.
100%. Maybe.
Where Magic Johnson was watching, you know, Larry Bird's box scores the next day and having to wait until the paper came out, et cetera. So this is very different in that sense that things are a lot more quickly accessible. But at the same time, he's definitely watching what happens over there. And that's the interesting thing, though, is that he criticizes Whiteside for stat stuffing, but I'm sure that he's probably aware of it. And then that's the other thing that's overlooked, too, is that Whiteside actually did a pretty good job defending him. Sure, he picked up foul trouble, but Embiid struggled that night.
So you mentioned that this is the Larry Bird, Magic Johnson of a different era, right? Well,
yes.
SeatGeek is the way to buy tickets in the new era, right? Because buying tickets to sports and concerts used to be complicated. When you wanted to go see Larry Bird, I don't know how you bought tickets. I don't know. But
scalpers.
Now, scalpers, just shady stuff. You don't want any of that shadiness. SeatGeek takes all the shadiness out of it. It's the best, simplest way to buy tickets. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. And with SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you could buy and sell tickets in just two taps. They help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action at a great value, and you don't have to talk to some smelly scalper who may or may not be selling you legitimate tickets outside of an arena. They are designed to make your ticket buying experience easier. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to price compare for you and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, they grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off of their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LONBA, that's promo code LONBA, and you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. The season's right around the corner, guys. Start looking at SeatGeek and getting those tickets for the games that you want to go to. All right, let's get into the mailbag. So
a lot of similar questions in today's mailbag. A particularly pressing concern, I'd say, from our listeners.
Right. And you're talking about Magruder, so let's get right into it. What does Rodney Magruder's injury mean for Justice Winslow's minutes? Could Richardson or Winslow start? That coming from Callum Harley from Australia. So Magruder had a stress fracture. He's going to be out anywhere between 3 to 6 months, right?
Surgery. He elected to have surgery to reduce the stress fracture and to have it repaired. And that means that it could be a prolonged recovery period, of which we're not quite sure how long it could be. Some people are saying as much as a season-ending injury, so that's a possibility.
And regardless, the Heat had to find a new starting small forward, and that game against the 76ers didn't really give any hint to where they're going. They ended up just playing Ellington in the starting lineup. They went with a three-guard unit, but a lot of guys weren't playing in that game, so I'm not going to count that. So it comes down to basically Justice Winslow or Josh Richardson, right? I think this helps Justice Winslow. Now, there's a lot of talk. Josh Richardson hasn't had a killer preseason. He looked really good in that preseason. I think you start Justice Winslow. And the reason I think you start Winslow is because, number one, you need to break up. We're assuming that Kelly Olynyk is indeed going to be the starter at power forward, at least for the start of the season. That's what it seems like. If that's the case, you've got to break up Winslow and James Johnson. You insert Winslow into that starting lineup. He can be that third ball handler for Dragic and Waiters. And look, it's not the best use of his talent. We saw that he's probably best when he's just leading the offense. But as we've discussed already throughout the preseason, those Winslow plus G League units aren't happening in the regular season. So you've got to get Winslow in. You've got to find another way to utilize Winslow. And I think just having him in the lineup as maybe just the defensive stopper, where we know that Magruder could sometimes struggle just because of his size, I think that's the best way to utilize Winslow. And that actually kind of goes to another question we got from Chris Leach. He asks, do you think Winslow in the starting lineup is the best option now that James Johnson is on the bench? He could take some burden away from 7-Eleven, Dragic and Waiters is his nickname, and people forget he has some chemistry with Whiteside on the pick and roll. While I don't think he's better than Goran and Dion in this role, he's capable and can reduce some wear and tear and let them focus a bit more on scoring. And then Look, we got a lot of questions on Magruder. Billy Kuhn also responds, I think Winslow should take Magruder's spot and just focus on guarding the best player on the other team, like I just said. Keep Richardson and the Johnson brothers on the bench for that terrifying bench unit that other teams aren't equipped to guard. So we've got a lot of comments on Magruder. I think Winslow should start. Where do you fall on this, David?
I'm starting to come around on that notion. I thought, you know, for so long we had preached that Josh Richardson was the better option.
Yeah.
But I think you get into this now that the looks like the starting lineup will probably include Kelly Olynyk over James Johnson. I think it's better to have an additional ball handler like Winslow out there, and one who's not necessarily going to be focused on his scoring. In fact, probably shouldn't be. You know, as we talked about in his player preview a couple of weeks ago, you know, he should probably focus on everything else, and this really gives him that opportunity to do so. That, you know, he can concentrate, as Billy and you suggested, on just being a primarily defender. You know, being a complementary ball handler to initiate offense. Now you have Olynyk out there along with Dragic and Waiters to catch and shoot for threes, wide open threes potentially. And I think Winslow is capable of finding them because he is such a gifted passer. And he doesn't have to worry about scoring so much. You'll probably see a lot of what we saw with Deion last year, where he missed shots at the rim, mm-hmm. and then Whiteside is there to clean them up. I think this is going to be a real boon for Whiteside as well, because Winslow has not been able to finish at the rim particularly well. But he'll command, I think, a double team as he goes to the rim because he's got that quick first step. If he gets past a defender, he's probably going to pick up another additional defender, perhaps whoever's guarding Whiteside, draw him. He'll take a bad ill-advised shot at the rim, and then Whiteside will be there to clean it up. So
or better off, or even better, like we've seen from Winslow in the past, he'll find Whiteside for the dump-off. We know Winslow loves that dump-off pass after he's left his feet near the rim. That could be a good option for him. And
absolutely.
I think what we're going to see with I think Winslow could do a lot for the starting lineup. Namely, he could guard the best player on the other team, period, end of story. It doesn't matter what position that player plays as long as it's not a center, and in that case, Whiteside's got it.
It's what we were looking at James Johnson, and part of the reason why we expected him to fill that role is because of the contract he just signed. But if he's comfortable coming off the bench and his abilities are maximized with that duo of Johnson and Johnson coming off the bench, well, then that's fine. It doesn't really matter if he's, quote-unquote, earning his contract. You know, he's getting paid regardless of if he plays 30 minutes as a starter, 30 minutes coming off the bench. The point is he's going to play in crunch-time situations. And I think Winslow gives another competent ball handler and certainly a very solid defender, a versatile defender that can switch onto a number of positions.
And we might – and, you know, Winslow, he could do a lot for that starting unit. The obvious – the glaring hole there is that he can't shoot and that hurts the spacing, and that's something that – guys like Dragic and Waiters need, right, is that they need as much space as possible to cut to the rim. I'll say this, though, and look, in that starting lineup, it's going to have Whiteside. If Winslow starts, that's Whiteside and Winslow in the starting unit. Those are two non-outside spacer shooters, right, and so that can hurt the spacing. But Dragic and Waiters are very crafty. They are really good at getting to the rim. I think that's a little overstated, that they need all of that space. I think in a perfect world, they can have the space that somebody like James Harden had last year, when you've got guys like Ryan Anderson and Trevor Ariza spacing the floor for you at the forward positions. But that the Heat, I don't think that Waiters and Dragic necessarily need all of the space that having floor spacers around them would provide. I think they can get it done. But if Winslow's also in that starting unit, you could see maybe a Rodney Magruder-like effect. We didn't know Rodney Magruder was a good catch-and-shoot player last year, and he wasn't in Boston. He was just he got wide open shots when he was playing next to those guys because they're so good. Do you think anybody respected Magruder's outside shot when he was first in there for the first 30 games? No way.
Absolutely not.
We saw that they didn't really respect his shooting for most of the season because most teams don't know who Rodney Magruder is even in game 75, you know?
Right.
So Winslow's going to get a lot of wide open looks, and he's
I will
not,
say that that's probably a bad thing though, to be
he's
honest.
He's not been
with
good
that
at him. But if he's going to get better at shooting, which we hope he will, that's the way to do it, right?
I don't know. I'm kind of in the mindset now that it's probably different for him. Like, he probably needs to be able to just go through that quick shooting motion, not think about it because there's a defender closing out on him and he needs to get that shot off so he doesn't have to spend that much time thinking about it, overanalyzing it, holding the ball differently. He needs to get into that comfortable rhythm.
Yeah, catch and shoot. If he's just wide open in a catch and shoot, and that's been his problem. You're exactly right. Is like he hesitates on almost everything when he gets the ball.
Right.
If he can just figure out how to just, you know, catch it and pop it, regardless of who's around him, if he's wide open, it'll help. Right. It'd be less
chance
that, you know, of having his shot contested, but. So you're coming around to the Winslow thing. I think that you've just, if anything other than, you know, we could talk about the pros and cons about it, but you've got to separate him and James Johnson. And if James Johnson's coming off the bench, then I don't know where Winslow factors in other than just being the starter. Right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that was our concern, is that if Magruder was going to take a big chunk of those minutes, and with Josh Richardson looking as positive as he had been during the preseason, they were going to get a bulk of the minutes. And then the lineups of Winslow and Johnson just didn't work during the preseason. Again, you know, take that with the proverbial grain of salt. But at the same time, you didn't like that combination because they're duplicative of each other's strengths as far as their individual skills are concerned. So now this kind of clears up that logjam. And you certainly never want it to be at the cost of Magruder's health, because Rodney's a great guy, a great teammate, and somebody who had earned everything that he had gotten. But unfortunately, now that he's out of the lineup, you got to try and do whatever you can to maximize the players that you have left. And you know, there's options out there. There's other options that we'll discuss later on in the show. But for now, it looks like Winslow's probably the best one.
All right. Our next question comes from The Seven Vicious.
Nice.
From observation, as each game passes by, Justice Winslow is showing more and more confidence when bringing up the ball, although his shooting remains his Achilles heel. He's been very versatile when filling up the box score in a variety of ways. I could see Eric Spoelstra using him as a point forward in the future, but could you see the Heat taking it a step further and having Winslow be a point guard of the future? Assuming that he learns and masters the drive and kick offense, he could provide elite-level defense, court vision passing, and a respectable offense. As crazy as it sounds, we've seen Milwaukee experiment with a 6'11 Giannis. I think that's selling Giannis short. And Philadelphia, the Philadelphia experiment with Ben Simmons, who's at 6'10", surely the Heat can experiment with a 6'7 athletic wing. The Seven Vicious, you're preaching to the choir here. I've been saying this for about half the preseason now. I think Winslow is a point guard. I think Justice Winslow is a point guard. It just, if you look at what he does well and you look at what he doesn't do well, I think he's taller, bigger, more athletic, Ricky Rubio, or Rajon Rondo. That's what I think he is. He can't shoot, but when you put the ball in his hands, he just makes stuff happen for the offense. And he's a long, versatile wing player. He could, if you put him, look, we've talked a lot about what he could do ball handling wise, right? And how he's been impressive in small stints during the preseason. We've talked about that a million times. Defensively though, if you've got Winslow at point guard, he is not only guarding the opponent's point guard, and that's a matchup issue for any opponent coming in, right? I should say most opponents outside of Milwaukee and Philadelphia. If you're a point guard and you've got a Winslow guarding you from, you know, at full court or from half court, that's a problem. And then the second part of that is, once you involve, a lot of point guards basically just play pick and roll offense now with a big man. You involve Winslow in that pick and roll, he could switch onto the opposing big easily, right? Because he is a big. Essentially. Right. So, you know, you put him in that situation and he could be so dangerous defensively for the Heat. Look, Goran Dragic, we know he's on the other side of 30. If Winslow has a long-term future in Miami, I think he's a point guard. I've been saying this for a long time. I think Winslow's a point guard.
It certainly matches up with what we've seen out of him and what Spoelstra seems, as far as the situations that he's put Winslow in. It looks like he's trying to put him to be the primary ball handler whenever he's out there. He ran those late game units with the G Leaguers, as you call it, and the ball was in his hands. He had to be the one initiating offense, making the right decisions, running pick and roll, etc. So that looks like it's probably in the long term future, though. But that's the only thing, though, is that it definitely has to be in the long term.
Yes.
Right now, our backup unit, as versatile and deep as it goes, isn't one that's spacey enough, you know, as far as overall floor spacing to work in conjunction with Winslow very well. It's you got too many guys that are getting too much money that need to get some kind of significant playing time there. So at this point, it would be better if you could get, you know, like lineups in Houston, you know, per se, like with why, you know, James Harden was as effective as a point guard last year was because Eric Gordon was there shooting the ball out, you know, and Ryan Anderson was there. So many other guys on that roster capable of spacing the floor and doing it so effectively that it works when you have a guy like Harden all of a sudden make that transition. You know, the problem why Ricky Rubio's numbers in Minnesota weren't as good was because they didn't have that floor spacing. So you certainly see the impact of it. You need to surround a guy like Winslow with competent, you know, shooters. And that might be the case in the future. If you can resign Ellington or if Matt Williams comes along, you know, Olenek certainly takes a step up. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of different options out there, but you have to surround him with the right, you know, personnel or else he's just not going to look particularly comfortable because of his own offensive limitations.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think of in the future. In the meantime, they've got to figure out ways to use Winslow. And maybe he develops in a different way where he's not going to be a point guard, where he can just be a secondary ball handler, point forward type guy who can initiate some offense, but also be dynamic off the ball, which he's not right now. Maybe that is still a possibility, though. You know, I think you made a really great point. I think last week at some point on one of our shows, David, that we've got to keep in mind this guy played 18 games last year and he's rehabbing, and it's going to take a while for him just to get back into the flow of playing basketball alongside these guys, let alone playing it well. So we've got to be very patient with Winslow. For the meantime, I think, look, whether he's the starter, whether he's coming off the bench, or he's a deep reserve player at this point, I don't know, whatever Spoelstra decides, we've got to bring him along naturally, right? We didn't expect James Johnson to be what he was, and he turned out that, it turned out like throughout the season, Spoelstra gave him more and more stuff, right? He gave more and more, put more and more on James Johnson's plate, and James Johnson figured it out. And James Johnson wasn't a perfect player last year, but he figured it out. So, I think that's the approach with Winslow's patience. All right, we got a few more questions, including a hypothetical trade. But first, remember that you need to subscribe to David Locke's Locked On NBA podcast for all of your national NBA news throughout the offseason. He's got interviews with coaches, scouts, and league insiders. It's a must listen. Also, check out the rest of what the Locked On NBA channel has to offer by subscribing to the Locked On NBA channel wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. It's every... All 30 NBA teams have a podcast on the network, and it's all there right in that one feed, so you don't have to go looking around. And if you're a Heat fan, what I suggest is listen to the show, obviously after you listen to Locked On Heat's show. Go ahead and listen to, if the Heat are playing the Pacers, go listen to Locked On Pacers and see what they have to say about the matchup and what about that team. You could scout the opponent just by subscribing to that channel. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
So, we've got a hypothetical trade, David. Are you ready?
Always. That's the mantra. That's the mantra of the Lockdown Heat podcast. Always looking for hypothetical trades.
Always. This comes from Mark. Whiteside, Winslow, and Ellington to Portland for CJ McCollum, Al-Farouq Aminu, and Jusuf Nurkić.
Ooh.
Mark adds, I have to say this part, David. Mark says, like David, I think Winslow is a bust.
Oh, no.
But defense again, will be valued. His defense will be valued in Portland. We get our star scorer in McCollum, a Whiteside replacement, and Nurkić. This will also end up saving Portland some more money. What do you guys think? So... A couple notes.
Can a man just make one mistake?
No.
I guess not. Especially I'll be reminded of it forever.
You've mentioned several times that I've tried to help you. Several times that you don't like Winslow.
All right. Not don't like.
You hate him personally.
Yes. That I wish him and his family ill will. That's exactly right. That I've got a little dark shrine working here, maybe some voodoo play, you know, we'll see what happens. As far as the potential trade is concerned,
We should mention that Nurkic is set to be a restricted free agent next summer. That could play a major factor into this hypothetical.
That is a good point. Portland is looking to save some money. They keep bringing in players there and then letting them go or shipping them out right before restricted free agency kicks in, which is why they moved our boy Mason Plumlee to Denver last year. So, you know, they got to postpone the restricted free agency of their big man for another year in the hope that they can move some salary. They were able to trade Alan Crabb in a separate deal to Brooklyn. So they're doing the best they can to save as much money as possible in the hopes of trying to re-sign Nurk. But the problem for me then becomes McCollum. I think McCollum was a name that you and I had talked about pretty frequently at the start of last season as a potential trade or acquisition. But then that was before the 13-game win streak and the 30-11 streak, and then what happened during the offseason. And as much as we like personally McCollum and his ability to space the floor, his personality, just his leadership and everything else that he brings, he's just no longer necessary on this roster unless you're going to make other moves to get rid of Tyler, to move Dion, et cetera. A guy like McCollum right now just doesn't fit as well on this roster. Look, Dwayne Wade didn't sign in Miami. And he said so because he wasn't a fit here at this point in time. And so if a guy like Dwayne Wade, who's going to get less minutes, not necessarily call for the ball as much, but has a lot of connection to Miami, still doesn't see his fit here, a guy like McCollum certainly doesn't have one at this point. Again, unless you make a secondary move to move either Deion Waiters or Tyler Johnson.
I think that's the other part. If you're going to make this trade happen, I think you add Deion Waiters into this deal. And you maybe take Aminu out and you add Evan Turner
from ET. I'm not sure, man. That's
I'm not a fan of Evan Turner. I'm just saying that's how it gets done, because McCollum, this trade would be very much like what Cleveland and Boston did, where Cleveland didn't necessarily need Kyrie Irving, or I'm sorry, Boston didn't necessarily need Kyrie Irving,
right?
But his ceiling is so much higher. And so, yeah, you trade Isaiah Thomas, who basically ran your offense last year. Your entire offense was built around. But you trade him for somebody with such a high ceiling in Kyrie Irving. CJ McCollum's ceiling is much higher than Dragic or Waiters. It just is. He's one of the craftiest scorers in the NBA. He's got, you know, still a, you know, this guy is somebody that can put up numbers like 20-plus points per game and be a lead point guard. But he's the secondary option on Portland. I have no doubt McCollum could be the first option on a good team. And he's only 26. He's got a lot of room to grow. And if you're Miami and you love McCollum as a prospect and you need to, and you feel like you want to make a move, I like McCollum as a buy low type prospect who can elevate into, you know, a perennial all-star. I think he's got that kind of potential. Where Dragic, we know he's on the other side. He's not getting much better. Deion Waiters, there's question marks about him. And it doesn't look right now that Winslow's going to be that guy. So maybe you go out and get your new alpha in McCollum. It would take a dramatic, you're right, it would alter the chemistry of this unit completely. It would be a step back in the short term, but to potentially get a long-term step forward and to get your star in the long term. We know that the Heat, and I talked about this with Irving. That's why I think they had to make an offer for Kyrie Irving, whether they did or not. I thought that they had to because there's just not a lot of routes to find all-stars. This McCollum trade would be like when Houston traded for James Harden. It would be buy low now. Maybe this guy just explodes and becomes like an MVP candidate. I think McCollum could do it. I love McCollum. He could get to that level. But
here's the other option, though.
Yeah.
What if instead of Aminu, they include Evan Turner? And what if Ellington, you include, or in addition to Ellington, you include Goran Dragic and whatever salary is necessary on their end. But instead of McCollum, you ask for Dame.
No, they would never trade Dame for that. I don't think Portland ever trades Damian Lillard. He means too much.
I agree. At the same time, I just don't know that McCollum is viewed league-wide in the same lens that Kyrie Irving is.
No, he's
like,
not
I don't think. I don't think anybody sees McCollum and goes, "This could be the cornerstone of our franchise." He's mostly a complimentary player, a secondary, almost all star.
So, first of all, I don't think Portland would do this deal unless Nurkic doesn't have the, what was it, for like 20 or 30 games, he was just on fire last year, right? It was just everything that he wanted to be, but before he got traded to Portland, he was in Denver and he was grumpy because he wasn't getting the touches that he wanted, because he wasn't involved in the offense like he wanted to be. If that happens in Portland, and all of a sudden that goes south, I could see them trying to get off of Nurkic's deal, because he's going to be a restricted free agent, and even if he does play well, or just plays mediocre, his potential alone is going to force their hand to give him a big deal, right? Like an Allen Crabbe type, $18 million a year type deal. Nurkic is probably going to be looking for the max. So if you that might end up being cheaper, or more, Whiteside might end up being just cheaper. And the other thing in Portland is that their defense is awful. We've seen how Whiteside can impact the defense. He could change the landscape of a defense with his rim protection alone. He could just change the entire outlook of that defense. I think Whiteside's still a great fit for Portland. He's a better fit as a center than Nurkic. As great as Nurkic was in that small sample size, Whiteside's still a better fit for that team. So if Portland feels like they need to shake it up, I could see Whiteside maybe being somebody that they target. And if you're Miami, maybe you prefer to have Olynyk as your starting center, or getting Bam some more minutes if he starts showing out towards the trade deadline. Maybe you do try to include Winslow and another, as Zach Lowe predicted in his 32 crazy predictions. Maybe you include Winslow and Deion Waiters in order to lose that Deion Waiters contract if he's not playing up to snuff. And then you get a McCollum back in return. This seems...
You think they'd hang on to Lillard that strongly, though? You don't think they'll ever move him?
She'll ever move him. He means so much for the culture of that team. If you trade Lillard, I think the entire thing falls apart.
Okay. I think their ceiling becomes higher if they make that move to get Whiteside and Dragic, to be honest with you.
Why wouldn't they just do Whiteside, Dragic for McCollum and picks? Like, you could still play Lillard and Dragic just like...
Because Lillard's ceiling is higher, but his fit with McCollum doesn't work as well, which is why Portland needs to move on.
You're trying to get Lillard out of...
Yeah, I think from Miami's perspective, you could look at Lillard as the guy who matches up as perfectly as possible with the Kyrie Irving situation, which obviously Miami was interested in. So I think you can get Lillard, and all of a sudden you say, this is the superstar of your team. This is the guy who's going to take and make those big shots. It hurts Deion a little bit in the short term, but whatever. This is a guy with a much higher ceiling here. So
it's all hypothetical.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Final question for the mailbag here comes from Taylor Monk. Any interest in Matt Barnes or Mike Dunleavy because of Ronnie Magruder's injury? Either could start, but they'd get Luke Babbitt-like minutes, meaning that they'd probably start and come out within a few minutes, and the reserves would probably see more minutes at that position. So we also had some ideas. Martell Webster, who played last year in Washington, he was injured, but is a 38% career three-point shooter, can play a little bit of defense, has nice size. And then you mentioned Richard Jefferson before we started recording. You mentioned to me Richard Jefferson, who just got traded to Atlanta but is expected to get bought out.
Yeah.
And he might be a great option. I love the Richard Jefferson idea. So let's just talk about that just flat. Because Jefferson's better than Matt. I don't want Matt Barnes. No thanks.
Definitely not. He's a good one.
Mike Dunleavy is 47 years old. Sorry. Martell Webster, coming off of an injury, wasn't very good in his last year in Washington, even though I like him as a player. I think... the veteran leadership that Richard Jefferson brings, and just that catch and shoot ability that he still has, and he showed that in Cleveland. I love the idea of Richard Jefferson as this team's starting small forward in the short term while Magruder's hurt. Even if Magruder's healthy, I love the theoretical idea of Jefferson in the starting lineup. I don't think it happens, but I'd love to talk about it.
Richard Jefferson is a guy that is an unfortunate situation, not now, but as far as the public perception is concerned, because I think everybody is expecting, and still to this day was expecting, him to be the player that he once was with the New Jersey Nets, the guy who was running alongside Jason Kidd and Vince Carter and everything else. And that player is no longer an option. We're 37 years old. Yeah. He's just not realistically ever going to be that kind of player. Now, he can get you spot minutes. He can do some things. He can shoot from outside a little bit. He can still attack the rim a little bit. But you're right in that mostly what he brings at this point, I think, is just a really, really, really good bonding team presence. Mm-hmm. Now, it worked perfectly in Cleveland, which is to say that it might not work as well elsewhere. It didn't work as well in Golden State. It didn't work at all in San Antonio, which is a very bizarre thing because almost everybody goes to San Antonio and takes an astronomical leap. David Lee last year, a veteran who wasn't, you know, ever – he's not in the league this year, partly because he just doesn't have a fit anymore, and San Antonio made him into a serviceable defender and a competent scorer. I think Jefferson, for whatever reason, just clashed with Popovich, just didn't work there at all. But nowadays – you know, in Cleveland was the perfect combination for him in that they were a veteran-laden team. They can appreciate a guy like that. He had close friendships there between Kevin Love and Chandra. He was able to kind of blend in. And I think they don't win a championship without Richard Jefferson. And I'm not the first person to say this because I think regardless of the talent of other players that are on that team, Jefferson was so good at getting people to kind of just lighten up and make jokes and engage in group texts, things that hadn't been done there because of that high pressure situation between LeBron and running the team all of a sudden, Kyrie feeling jilted and Kevin Love, you know, phasing out instead of fitting in, et cetera. So I think Richard Jefferson kind of just said, you know what, screw it, guys, have fun. We're NBA ball players competing for the national championship. Who cares? Have fun. And he got everybody to lighten up and, you know, down 3-1, he made an important start for Cleveland. A lot of people forget that. And he played a big number of minutes there in the finals, and they won. And, you know, it validated his addition to the team. And I think they'll suffer for it this year, to be honest with you.
I think he played some minutes last year against the Warriors guarding Kevin Durant. I mean, this is a guy who could still play. He's not, obviously not the player he used to be.
He's not Magruder. You're not going to get the same kind of effort out of him that you get out of Magruder because he's a 12, 15-year veteran, whatever it is.
But I like the idea of him coming in, just spacing the floor. People still respect his jumper, right? That's one thing where that's the opposite of Magruder, right? Magruder might at this stage be a better offensive player than Richard Jefferson, but nobody knows who he is still, you know? They respect Richard Jefferson, at least just from a veteran standpoint. And so they'll close out hard on him. They'll guard him on the perimeter. And that would help, obviously, Dragic and Waiters. And if you just play him, even at 37 years old, you just play him for the first few minutes of the game, and then you start your substitutions with either Winslow or James Johnson or whomever, that works and that makes sense. The only problem is, right now the Heat don't have a roster spot. I think you'd have to waive at that point A.J. Hammonds and bring in Jefferson, which I'm not opposed to. I just don't see Hammonds playing a role. His contract is guaranteed, so unless they view Richardson as a player who can add real value, I don't see them waiving a guaranteed contract just to bring in another player. But Richardson, even if he's not making the biggest impact on the floor, like you're saying, he's a huge locker room. He's a great locker room presence. It's not like Miami needs that Richard Jefferson presence like Cleveland very sorely did. Yes. But they love those kind of guys, though. You know what I mean? Like that, having another voice like that. Right. Would just be great for this locker room. I know Eric Spoelstra would want to be around a player like that, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
You bring in somebody like that, I think that just increases the bond. That adds another great voice, another great leader into that organization. And on the floor, I still think he could do some stuff. I really do. I think you put him in for the first few minutes of the game, and then you start getting into your rotation patterns. The only problem is once Magruder would come back, does Jefferson go back to the bench? Magruder comes back. That's probably what the situation would be. Or Magruder comes off the bench as a shooting guard. I don't know. It could be any number of ways. But I think personally, I love the Richard Jefferson idea. Once he gets bought out by Atlanta, I think the Heat should waive Hammonds and bring in Jefferson. I think this should get done.
I'm with it. I've become a Jefferson fan, to be honest with you, just because of the impact I think that he had there. It would be great to see him kind of bonding there and getting people to kind of get comfortable in their skin a little bit and bond as a team. Part of why last year worked, I think, as well as it did, was because of that strong bond that everybody shared as players. And I think Jefferson is a guy capable of doing that. Like he connects with old hats, young guys. He connects with everybody there. You know, it's one of the things that was made him as popular in Cleveland as possible is that he connected with such a high level with media, even with everybody out there. And so I think that was something that that you could definitely have in Miami. And he's a guy you can always get a quote from, et cetera.
And there's not a lot of guys with championship experience on the Heat right now. It's Udonis Haslam, period.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And
yeah.
So, and Haslam hasn't won a title as recently as Richard Jefferson. And he hasn't played a major role on a championship team, at least on the floor, since 2006, right? So yeah. Richard Jefferson played a major role on a championship team recently, you know, 2 years ago. So adding that could only help.
There are other options too. I guess we would be remiss in not pointing out Gerald Green bought out by the Milwaukee Bucks. Not happening, right? I don't think that's either. Perry Jones back. III.
Who?
Perry Jones.
No, he's a bust.
I'm trying to think anybody else. that was I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much it. As far as like a guy who can come in there and be a potential three. No. Trey McKinney Jones, he's too small to play the three, right? He's more of an off guard, if anything.
Yeah.
Briante Weber, he got bought out again.
Small point guard.
I know. I'm just saying. I don't know if you want to have another guy like that to kind of handle the ball a little bit. Probably not. Move
somebody like Ellington or something to the.
Possibly.
You don't need him coming off the bench.
Possibly. Sean Williams, Miami Heat legend.
Neon Sean Williams?
Yes.
No. Look, I have no problem with Neon Sean Williams. I actually like Martell Webster a lot, but Richard Jefferson's just a better fit. I'd rather have him.
Right? So Vander Blue, right? He's a two guard.
Love Vander Blue, but he's a two guard.
Yeah.
A big fan of Vander Blue. Never got a shot. Go Marquette.
Yeah, doesn't seem like it's going to happen for him in the league, unfortunately.
G League star though. I'm fine with that. He can just dominate there. Maybe if Michael Beasley gets bought out by New York, we can. Do that. Mm. I'd actually be very okay with that.
No, we're done. We moved on from the Beasley era. No.
All right. So, I think we're going to go out and do you want to just predict that this is going to happen? Richard Jefferson to the Heat?
No, I don't think it is. I think he goes to Boston.
I think he goes to the Heat. I think it's happening.
Okay. I think it's happening. I hope you're right.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Reminder to send us your mailbag questions to lockedonheat@gmail.com or tweet them using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Theme song is by CeeLo Keys. Outro music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.